This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Does getting deeply involved in the companies you own pay off? From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. A man named William Ackman is famous for shaking up the companies he invests in. He's one of the best known of the current crop of activist investors. And today there's word he has forged an unusual alliance to buy the company that makes Botox, the wrinkle-eradicating and face-immobilizing drug. Ackman has joined forces with Valeant Pharmaceuticals to purchase Allergan in a cash and stock deal that values Allergan at about $46 billion. What is the track record of activist investors in boosting the value of companies they meddle with? Bloomberg News reporter Tara LaChapelle went through the data. Tara, good morning.
Good morning.
So if you're the management team of a company, activist shareholders can drive you nuts. Companies often argue that activist shareholders hurt the rest of the shareholders. What did you actually find?
We did a study looking back since January 2009, and we found that these companies, they're doing better than U.S. stocks overall right now, and it seems like activists are actually helping these guys. And what's really interesting is these are the same companies that were underperforming U.S. stocks initially.
Now, activist investors can push for all sorts of things, extra dividend payments, changes in management. Some are trying to get companies to pollute less. But what are some examples of what might have worked and what might not have worked for a company's share price?
Well, one example that gave a really good payoff to shareholders was the Beam Fortune Brands example. Bill Ackman, he got involved and he said Fortune Brands had too many disparate businesses. They were in Beam Bourbon, a golf business, Titleist, and then they were also in a lock and security business. And he said, these three don't make sense together. Why don't you just break them up? So they ended up doing that and they doubled shareholders' money over that time.
Now, speaking of Mr. Ackman, though, sometimes when he's rattling the cage of some of these companies where he has a big footprint, I'm thinking JCPenney, things don't always work out quite as well.
Yeah, he brought in a CEO who had some ideas for the company, and those ideas did not bring in more shoppers. And shareholders ended up losing something like $5 billion over the course of his involvement there.
It seems as if we're in another era of shareholder activism. Is it fair to say there are more activist shareholders out there?
Absolutely. There are some small firms popping up overnight. It's not just limited to these guys that have been around for years and years. Now, activism is basically defined as shareholders who take a 5% stake or so, sometimes less, sometimes more, and they're just pushing for ways to increase value. They're not trying to take control like they used to.
Tara LaChapelle writes for Bloomberg News. Tara, thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, Valeant Pharmaceuticals is the name I meant earlier. The reappraisal of ultra-high-speed trading continues, prompted in part by books by financial writer Michael Lewis and The Wall Street Journal's Scott Patterson. Does split-second buying and selling mask illegal behavior or short-change regular investors? The Securities and Exchange Commission is now reportedly looking at requiring brokers to disclose exactly which company is carrying out an order to buy or sell. From time to time, we check in with Jason Voss, Director of Content at the CFA Institute. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, David.
In theory, if you know which exchange is doing a trade, in theory, you'd get a better sense if there's some kind of practice going on that is to the detriment of the investor.
Well, yeah, I think the operative word there, as you emphasized, was theory. I think that's certainly the case. This proposal has the whiff of industry meeting with regulators and putting forth a solution that will allow a highly lucrative practice to go on. But I think the consumer, armed with this information, is going to feel just as ignorant afterward.
It's so interesting. It conjures the image of when you go in to close on your new house. There is disclosure galore. And if you sat down and read the fine print, I suppose it would help you make a more informed decision. Although at that stage of the game, I don't know if you'd change anything.
You know, there's a sea of information that the financial industry can generate and put out there for investors. Each of those documents has a team of lawyers, perhaps hundreds in size, drafting them. And yet when you're sitting down to close on a house or some sort of new brokerage account or whatever your financial transaction, all you've got is your spouse to advise you. And I don't know that more information equals a more informed consumer. I just don't.
Jason, I remember one time you and I met for coffee. You just come back from a conference about ultra-high-speed trading, and your head was spinning. You were amazed with all the things that can go on when securities are bought and sold rapid fire.
What I came back gobsmacked about was the fact that it's here to stay. It's not going to go away, and the primary reason it's not going to go away is that it's just too lucrative for the exchanges themselves. It's essentially what keeps them in business. And so what that means is that regulators, the general public, professional investors alike, all have to adapt to the new reality. And thank goodness for folks like Michael Lewis illuminating some of the issues, rightly or wrongly, right? He may have gotten, you know, some of the issues incorrect, but those he did get correct have informed, I think, an important discussion for investors.
Jason Voss is director of content at the CFA Institute, which is to financial advisors what maybe the Bar Association is to lawyers. Jason, thank you.
Thank you very much, David.
And a judge in Albany, New York today will hear Airbnb's challenge to an investigation into the online short-term rental business. The New York Attorney General has asked for info on people who use the app to rent out their apartments and houses. Airbnb of San Francisco calls this a, quote, government-sponsored fishing expedition. The company likes to say its service generates local tourism dollars, but critics say it drives up the cost of affordable housing. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.